The next case set for argument this morning is Ellingson Drainage versus South Dakota Department of Revenue. Andrew Hurd is arguing for the appellant, Ellingson Drainage, and Kirsten Jasper will be arguing on behalf of the State Department of Revenue. Each side will have 15 minutes, and then Mr. Hurd, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal. You can proceed with your argument, Mr. Hurd.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Drew Hurd, and I represent the petitioner, Ellingson Drainage, Inc. The Department of Revenue seeks to impose a tax on Ellingson's use of equipment in South Dakota for a single day, at the same tax rate that South Dakota citizens would pay for use of the same equipment exclusively within the state. As applied to Ellingson, SDCL 1046-3 violates both the Due Process Clause and the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution. While these are distinct challenges, both of them essentially boil down to the question of whether or not the tax imposed is rationally related to the benefits and services provided to Ellingson by the state of South Dakota in exchange for the tax. Now, the tax as applied to Ellingson under 1046-3 fails to meet even this very low constitutional standard, and we ask this court to reverse the circuit court's holding and rule that 1046-3, as it's been applied to the petitioner, is unconstitutional. Now, 1046-3 and its application are an issue of first impression for this court. It's been mentioned by the court in the past, but it's never been fully analyzed. It's one of only two use statutes like it that at least the petitioner has been able to find. The only other state that has one like it is North Dakota. Now, 1046-3 specifically seeks to tax goods that were purchased outside of the state of South Dakota. And at the time they were purchased, the purchaser had no intent of ever using them in South Dakota. But at some point in the future, they subsequently bring it into the state, and that's when the tax attaches.
Mr. Hurdy, if I could just jump in there for a second. I want to make sure I have your arguments correct. It seems as though your argument on appeal is that your client is not subject to use tax in these circumstances at all. You owe nothing.
That's correct. At least as it, because 1046-2 is the traditional use tax.
And the reason I ask is because it wasn't always that way. It seems like earlier in the sort of the run up to all this, when it was an administrative matter, there was that long string of emails, and it seemed at points along the way, before your involvement, I'm sure, but there was this idea of maybe a per diem rate or, hey, here's the percentage of use. We'll take that on a per diem basis. That seems fair. And of course, that wasn't really where it went, but it seemed like there was an acknowledgement. I guess all this is heading to the idea that, in your view, does the state have the authority constitutionally to tax your client at all for the use of the equipment during this audit period?
Yes, Justice Salter, they probably do. But South Dakota doesn't have a statute currently that can constitutionally attach to the petitioner's taxable activities in South Dakota. The rate imposed by 1046-3 is the same rate that applies to South Dakota. It's our sales tax rate. It's the same rate that South Dakota citizens pay when they buy goods in the state and use them exclusively in the state. We're on a stipulated record, and pursuant to the record, all of the equipment that was being taxed was used in South Dakota for a single day. Because of that, it can't possibly be rationally related to the benefits provided by the state if, on one hand, South Dakota citizens are paying 4.5% for a lifetime of use in the state, and then on the other, Ellingson Drainage for one day is subject to the same tax rate.
That's the basis for your as applied challenge, sort of what I've called, it could be unfair, but your bad bargain argument, or your bad bargain argument. But this is your as applied challenge. But the Department of Revenue didn't say, hey, Ellingson, for your one day of use, this is what you owe. And that's the rule. They just said, whatever your use is, this is what you owe. Ellingson decided we're only going to use it for one day. So, in other words, is it a question of, it almost seems like Ellingson determined unilaterally, the parameters factually of its as-applied challenge, because the Department of Revenue didn't say, hey, you can't bring this back. You'll have to owe more tax. This is your bill for one day. They just said, this is your bill. You can use it however long you want or not. So it seems like you're kind of shaping the as-applied challenge here factually with subsequent events unilaterally.
Well, you know, I would, you know, Justice Salter, both parties signed the stipulated facts.
Understood.
And by doing so, I think the departments acknowledged we don't really care how long you actually used it. One day is enough for the tax under 1046.3 to attach. And that just, I mean, it cannot be true under these facts. And the reason is that, so 1046.3, again, it applies to goods which are purchased, which at the time of purchase were not intended to come into South Dakota. That differs from 1046.2, and that's our traditional use tax statute. Basically, every state in the country has one. And that is directed at South Dakota citizens and saying, hey, there is no point in you going to Minnesota to try to get better prices, because when you bring it back here, we'll subject you to the same tax rate as well. And that is the two vital concerns underpinning that tax. The tax under 1046.2 are that, one, the state may lose revenue if South Dakota citizens go abroad to find better prices on the sole factor of whether or not they're going to be paying that sales tax. And two, South Dakota retailers also lose business if South Dakota citizens decide, hey, if I just go to the Empire Mall or the Mall of America and I don't have to pay sales tax, I can get cheaper rates there. It's to discourage people from doing those sorts of things by essentially imposing the tax on them either way.
So why isn't that second objective being carried out by the manner of the way that use tax is applied here, which is a substitute for the sales tax, so long as the business is not being double taxed and gets credit if it had already paid that? Because if that had occurred, Ellingson wouldn't have been subject to the use tax under our law.
Sure. So I think that these facts don't meet that second prong, because 1046.3 by its very nature contemplates that Ellingson never would have bought this stuff in South Dakota, right? It was purchased out of state, not intended for use here. So South Dakota retailers can't be prejudiced by a Minnesota company buying things in its home state that it doesn't intend to use in South Dakota. Now, the department has introduced a sort of flip side to that one, which is not exactly how the prong is laid out in Western Wireless, but they've said, well, if you don't pay the sales tax or something equivalent to it, when you come in, you get to undercut South Dakota businesses because you can per se offer lower prices. First, there's nothing in the record that supports that argument. We don't know what prices Ellingson charged its customers. We don't know what Ellingson's tax basis is in Minnesota. We don't know what competing South Dakota companies can offer for the same drain tile work. So first, there's nothing in the record to support the argument. But in addition to that, this univariate analysis of if you don't pay this specific 4.5% tax or something equivalent to it, then businesses are per se prejudiced because you can offer lower prices. The argument, though, ignores the fact that companies like Ellingson in Minnesota are subject to a whole host of taxes that South Dakota companies are not. Minnesota state income tax being maybe the most prominent one. You know, South Dakota prides itself on having some of the lowest taxes in the country. Minnesota historically has had some of the highest taxes in the country. So it's not obvious that just by not having paid this 4.5% tax that they can undercut South Dakota businesses.
So the stipulated facts state pretty clearly that, in fact, none of this equipment has been taxed anywhere. So if Ellingson is liable for the use tax, and you don't know how other states work, but presumably it would be able to credit that against another state. But in any event, wouldn't it have to, many states, wouldn't you expect them to pay, or wouldn't they expect to pay use tax or sales tax at a minimum somewhere?
Well, I mean, Justice Salter, I think that, and it may just be the way that Ellingson, I don't know whether it's on purpose or accidental, But whatever they have done, my understanding of the reason they didn't pay sales tax in Minnesota has something to do with an agricultural equipment exemption. So that's why they didn't pay sales tax in Minnesota on the equipment. The reason they didn't pay use tax on any of the other states that they used it in is because no other state that they used it in has something equivalent to 1046-3, right? If Ellingson bought the equipment with the intention that it was going to be used on Minnesota drain tile projects, and then it takes it into a state like Iowa, Iowa's only use tax says goods purchased for use in Iowa are subject to our tax. And then obviously Ellingson wouldn't be subject to the sales tax. Now, I also want to be clear, though, you know, Ellingson's customers are paying South Dakota sales tax on the services that Ellingson provides. You know, there's no dispute that Ellingson pays taxes on the fuel and food it consumes, the hotels it goes to. I mean, Ellingson and its employees are paying a whole host of taxes in South Dakota when they come to do business here. But a tax on the value of their equipment when they brought it in is not rationally related to their activity in the state when they were only here for a single day. And most, you know, the rational relation argument typically is used in things, you know, in the interstate commerce context anyway, things like income taxes, where a state can only tax that portion of the income which a company generated in that state. Here, you know, the value of the equipment, 1046-3 only really makes sense if it's applied in the same way that 1046-2 is, in that the equipment that is being brought in and taxed, the standard, and it comes from Hennaford versus Silas Mason. It's an old U.S. Supreme Court case. It's one of the seminal use tax cases. This court is cited in Western Wireless. That's where it got the vital prongs from. Hennaford says that it, with respect to these sorts of compensatory taxes, that they will attach once interstate commerce is at an end, once the property has come to rest in the taxing state, and once that property has become part of the common mass therein.
Hennaford seemed to say, Hennaford had a bunch of property that was brought in for a project that wasn't itinerant, wasn't moving around once it got there. And I kind of, you could be right, maybe we just read it a little bit differently. I kind of just thought there was sort of a passing comment in Hennaford that said, yeah, this isn't like an in-transit situation. I wasn't so sure that was holding as much as it was sort of this observation, because it wasn't really central to what was going on in Hennaford. All that stuff was there and was going to stay there for this dam project.
That may be true, Justice Salter, but I think it's nonetheless persuasive, at least in this context, because again, in Hennaford, they're not looking at this kind of tax either. They're looking at something equivalent to 1046-2. And that's, I mean, neither parties in their briefing ever identified a case that's directly analogous, probably because no other state has this statute or really applies it, or it's been challenged. I'm not sure. So both parties have been tasked with drawing analogies to existing tax law. And Hennaford, I think, provides some guidance for the court when you've got interstate operations, bringing equipment into a state for a project. And in Hennaford, so they're building the Grand Coulee Dam. So like you mentioned, a lot of that stuff is staying in there. But it also seems from the opinion, it seems that the equipment that was being purchased and taxed had been purchased for use on the Grand Coulee Dam project, i.e. purchased for use in the taxing state. And we don't disagree that 1046-2 is constitutional. But the pair of sales tax and use tax that 1046-2 and then 1045-2, you know, combine to create, those are the sort of use tax and sales tax cases that are being cited.
Is your challenge really then so much an as-applied challenge, or is it maybe kind of a facial challenge to 1046-3?
Justice Salter, I think that one could come up with hypotheticals that would make the application of 1046-3 constitutional, right? You could come up with some wild examples of people moving property in and out of the state continuously, and there may be scenarios where 1046-3, you know, would apply. I think the proper standard for 1046-3, I think it can exist as a statute, but I think it should only attach much in the same way that the tax in 1046-2 does, when things are being brought into the state for indefinite use herein. And the Department of Revenue actually themselves provided what I think is a great example of the application of the rule. On page 234 of the record, in those emails that you talked about, Justice Salter, there is an email between an auditor and one of the employees of Ellingson, And she's inquiring, how are you valuing the tax that you're placing on this equipment? And the auditor sends back an email that says it lists the implementing regulation, that ARSD 6401-0920. And that's the one that provides for that depreciation schedule. And then under that, it says example. And the example that it gives is there is a Sioux City company that has a conveyor belt installed. They buy it and install it for 2 years. And then they move that conveyor belt to their new facility in South Dakota. Presumably as a fixture. The example doesn't go really beyond that in terms of what I'm talking about. But I think that is how it should apply. If you have, if Ellingson opened a Brandon branch and moved this equipment into the state, and that was the equipment that it was going to use on the South Dakota projects, that's when 1046-3 should apply. And I think that also makes sense in light of the depreciation schedule, right? As of right now, it's not obvious how an older piece of equipment somehow enjoys the benefits of the state less than a brand new piece of equipment. The depreciation schedule really only makes sense. One of two ways the court can think about it. One, it's a proxy for the useful life of that equipment once it gets into the state for indefinite use. Or two, it can kind of be looked at as a sales tax on the on used equipment, essentially. Because we didn't have a actual market value for our equipment when we brought it in or when the audit was being conducted. So what we did was go with the default, which is purchase price minus 10% per year. That only really makes sense, though, if what the state is trying to do is find some sort of proxy for how much longer is this used piece of equipment going to enjoy the benefits of the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hurd. Ms. Jasper, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Ellingson Drainage here challenges, which is an out-of-state company, the imposition of a one-time use tax on equipment which was purchased without paying sales or use tax. Ellingson then brought that equipment into the state of South Dakota within 7 years of its purchase and used it for commercial purposes. This in-state use triggered the tax that's been discussed, 1046-3. A use tax, which is intended to level the playing field between all businesses in and out of state doing business within the state of South Dakota. South Dakota has broad authority to create its tax system. Our tax system includes sales taxes and use taxes, which work in complement to each other. Sales tax is a transactional tax on certain sales and services. A use tax then is imposed when the sales tax was not paid. The sales tax is there to protect and back up, or the use tax is there to protect and back up the sales tax. The use tax here was applied because sales tax was not paid by Ellingson on these 11 pieces of equipment that they brought in to use in South Dakota. And it's because of their privilege for the use of that equipment that was not originally purchased for use in the state, but used in the state, and it's going to be taxed at the same rate as the sales tax on the date of the first use in the state. As has been stated, Ellingson Drainage is a Minnesota-based company, and it has done drainage tile work in South Dakota as well as other states. It's held a South Dakota business tax license since 2008 and has been receiving the services of the state since 2008 pursuant to its business tax license. Within the three-year period at audit here, Ellingson Drainage completed 30 separate jobs within the state of South Dakota. Mr. Hurd talked about how the equipment was only here for one day. The record actually does not agree that these pieces of equipment were in the state for only one day. If you look at the stipulation, what the stipulation provides is the first day it was used in the state of South Dakota was this date. Furthermore, Mr. Hurd himself argued before the Office of Hearing Examiners, which can be found in the record on page 25, that some of the 30 jobs were short jobs, sometimes only one day. This equipment has not been here for only one day based on what the record, or was not here only one day based on what the record says.
And presumably, in applying this, our tax, use tax, statute, it wouldn't matter anyway if
Correct.
It's first taxed
Correct.
On the first day of use.
Right. The tax is triggered when the equipment is first brought into the state and used. That's when it is triggered. Much like the sales tax is triggered when? When it's purchased.
And there's no temporal component to that.
Correct. There is no temporal component.
So even if it was only here one day, the full tax applies?
Correct. Because all of the full force of the state services are present once you enter the state, right? They are present here for all residents, all people conducting business, as well as all visitors. And they have to be at the ready for that service when the people need them.
As to the as-applied challenge here and the suggestion that the use should be fairly apportioned in some manner, are there practical reasons as to why that would not be possible? And understanding that's not, you know, what you're arguing, what our use tax is and how it should work, but...
Right. The department's first response to that would be, and I will get to your, to answer your question, would be, that's not what the test is. That's not what the Constitution doesn't look at, how we apply it. It just has to be what the statute is and whether or not it's rationally related to the use, right, and the services. And, but to answer your question, it's a simple, easy way to calculate it. So businesses that are doing in-state or out-of-state business within the state can easily and consistently apply that standard when calculating what their use tax obligation is going to be to the state, and then counting that in with what their overhead is for whatever their bid projects are, right? It's a simple, consistent test. Not only is it consistent, but it's the same test that's used for the sales tax and for the tax provided in 1046-2, which Ellingson agrees is constitutional. It's a tax on the use. Here, it's the use of the equipment, right? That's what's being taxed. On the first day it's used, so when the tax is triggered, on the fair market value. That's exactly how the sales tax is applied. What's the fair market value? The purchase price at the time it was purchased. So the test is actually the same. It's just applies differently here because it applies when the product was brought into the state. And then because typically the product is brought into the state 1 to 7 years after purchase, then we do the 10-year depreciation schedule so that it's easy math and can be applied easily.
And we have a different perspective here retroactively as a result of the audit. But what you said earlier is more of a prospective view, which is a contractor may well not know how many days a piece of equipment is going to remain in the state when they're bidding a job. And so to have a per diem rate would maybe create more problems than it solves. Less certainty in any event.
And less consistency, right? You've got one of the things I want to point out that Mr. Hurd argued is that 1046-3 only applies to out-of-state businesses. That's not true. That's not what the statute says. If you have a business that, say, is based in Sioux Falls, I'm going to maybe use Henry Carlson Company for an example. They probably do business in Minnesota as well. They may have a Laverne office. They may buy equipment in Minnesota that they don't plan to bring back to South Dakota and use in South Dakota. But one of their pieces of equipment breaks down. They're going to grab, because Laverne is not that far away, they're going to grab that equipment, bring it over, rather than bring in a new piece of equipment. And if that piece of equipment is less than 7 years old, Henry Carlson Company, an in-state business, is going to have to pay that same use tax on that piece of property that was not originally purchased in South Dakota for use in South Dakota, right? The only difference really between the application of 1046-2 and 1046-3 is the business's intent. And the reason that 1046-3 is there is because what do businesses sometimes do? They change their intent. Maybe when they first start their business, they don't want to do business in South Dakota, but now they want to. And so when they bring it in, they should be subject to the exact same tax liability for purposes of conducting business in South Dakota as every other business in the state or out of the state is. It's to level the playing field. It's so everybody has the same legal liability for tax when they're bidding on a project. One of the things I just want to quickly point out, even though I don't have a yellow light yet, if you look on page 4 of the state's brief, we set out a chart that puts what the information is that you need for the calculation. And that's the purchase price, the date purchased, the date that the product or the piece of previously untaxed equipment was brought into South Dakota and first used, and the taxable value. I want to make three corrections because they were wrong in the brief. On the fourth piece of equipment, the purchase price was $576,500. On the fifth piece of equipment, the taxable value was $86,625 rather than what's listed. And for the final piece of equipment, the 11th piece of equipment, the taxable value was $57,779.17. If you did the math like I did the first time, it didn't add up. And so I wanted to make sure that that was corrected. But the other thing I want to point out is when you look at the equity issue between in and out of state businesses, the total purchase price value for all of this equipment was about $2.1 million. The total taxable value, however, based on the time it was brought into the state, was $1.2 million. And that resulted in the tax assessment of $55,000, just over $55,000. And one of the other things with regard to that tax is when you look at, again, the state has an interest when creating its taxation, its tax system, in ensuring that there's fair competition among businesses. 1046-2, 1046-3, and the sales tax all work together to optimize the purposes of the state's sales and use tax system, and that's to create fairness and to make sure the burdens of the state's taxation are shared by all of those for whom it is made available to. And in this case, it is made available to Ellingson and its employees when they're here working in the state of South Dakota on their projects. And they've had that business tax license since 2008. It is Ellingson's burden here to show beyond a reasonable doubt that this statute does not clearly, palpably, or plainly violates one of the constitutional provisions. And when you look at I think Mr. Hurd even said it's a very low burden. Well, the burden to prove constitutionality is low, but that means his burden to prove that it's not constitutional is very high. And he cannot establish that here today because of the rational, I think he boiled almost all of the tests down to the rational related. And what I want to look at is when you look at external consistency, which was one of the factors within the complete auto test, external consistency to have that means the portion of the interstate activity taxed has to reasonably reflect the in-state component of the activity. The in-state component of this activity is what? The use of the equipment. And what's the tax on? The use of the equipment and its value at the time it comes into the state. Now, the state has defined how that value is calculated based on the 10% rule. But if Ellingson Drainage didn't agree with the 10% rule or thought a piece of equipment was more depreciated than that, they have the opportunity to present evidence to the state to say what they believe that value to be. Ellingson did not do that here. They did not try and assert what they thought the value of these 11 pieces of property is. And with back to the intent, there was not a stipulation as to what Ellingson's intent was when it bought these 11 pieces of equipment. If you look at the chart, several of the pieces of equipment, I'm going to just start probably with the 10th piece of equipment. It was purchased in April of 2018. And then used in April of 2019. Ellingson, again, has been licensed with the state of South Dakota since 2008. If we want to draw conclusions, they've done 30 jobs within the state of South Dakota in the three-year period. They are continuing to seek work in the state of South Dakota. Common sense would say that they're going to use that piece of equipment on probably more than one job because that equipment is already in South Dakota, and it makes sense to leave that equipment in South Dakota. Regardless of that, again, it doesn't matter when it comes in, one day or longer, the statute encompasses it because it's the use that triggers. And it's easier and more consistent to pay this one-time tax that's easily calculated for the purposes of of the for the purposes of meeting constitutional muster. The test or the calculation that the state uses is reasonable because of how easy it is to calculate and because it creates the equity, which is the purpose for the state's statutory system, which is fairness. In conclusion, I just want to reassert that Ellingson Drainage carries the burden here to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this statute violates the Constitution. And they have not established here that it violates either the Due Process Clause or the Commerce Clause. Rather, 1046.3 levels the playing field between in-state and out-of-state businesses. As Complete Auto stated, it is not the purpose of the Commerce Clause to relieve those engaged in interstate commerce from their share of a state's tax burden, even though it increases their personal cost of doing business. They choose to do business in the state of South Dakota, and they are subject to the same taxes as everybody else who does is. Therefore, the department respectfully requests that you affirm the decision of the circuit court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jasper. Mr. Hurd, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Mr. Hurd, as you're making your way up there, just a question. Let's say we accept your Hannaford argument, or Hannaford argument, and we say, okay, this is a way to read 1046.3, and the at-rest theory, joining the common mass of property standard applies. How would that apply, and how would we ever know factually, you know, when something's at rest? How would the legislature do anything about that? How would the department do anything about that? How could that even be workable?
Sure. So I think that much in the same way there's a mens rea sort of, if you will, component to 1046.2 and 1046.3, right? The department is making determinations about the purchaser's intent. I think that the way that the common mass sort of standard would work is, and it's like the example given by the department itself, what is the intent of the company when it is bringing that equipment into the state? Is it coming here to be used indefinitely in South Dakota, or is it coming here to be used transiently before it is then taken out and used in interstate commerce in 19 other states that year? And I mean, the department makes those sorts of determinations all the time. Just to say that it's a simple and easy calculation does not make it constitutional. But the way
they're reading those two statutes, the two statute and the three statute in concert, to me, sort of eliminates any risk that they're wrong, because one or the other will apply. But under your sort of moving, not moving, at rest, sort of progressive theory, the mens rea requirement that you're talking about, and I understand your argument, but that would really be very, very subjective. That would be, it require investigation, an assessment in at one point in time in a contemporary sense, and then things might not play out that way. Maybe the taxpayer says, you know what, we were going to come to rest here, but as it turns out, we've got a job in Kansas, and so we're not at rest anymore. And then how does the department find out about that? How does this sort of tracking of all this gear play out?
I think that example you just gave, Justice Salter, about going to Kansas, I think the tax still attaches. It's the intent when the property comes into the state. If my Sioux Falls branch shuts down next week and I got to take it back to Minnesota, the tax should still attach. I mean, it's the intent of the person when they're bringing it in. And if the intent is that it's going to be part of the common mass of property in the state and it's going to be used indefinitely herein, then I think that you can subject it to the same tax that South Dakota citizens are taxed for the same thing. And then you subject it to that depreciation schedule, because the state apparently understands that old equipment should not be subject to the same tax rate. It isn't going to have the same useful life. It's not going to have the same burdens on our infrastructure or enjoy the same benefits. And so I think, you know, I think that's how it would apply. I want to reply to a couple things. First of all, I'd ask the court to look at the record again, because the record does not say this is the first day of use. What the stipulated facts say is this piece of equipment was purchased for this price and it was used in South Dakota on this date. Full stop. There's nothing else about the equipment. Also, the department in its appellee brief argues multiple times, seeming to agree with the premise that we're arguing about a one-day application of the tax. So that's a completely new argument that I haven't heard before, that the record isn't what it says it is. So I'd ask that the court disregard that argument. They talked about the in-state component of the activity being taxed. Part of the department's argument seems to be conflating things like what would apply under an income tax with what would apply under a use tax. The value of the equipment is the component of activity is using the equipment. It's undisputed that that equipment was also used in a whole bunch of other states. So to say that the in-state component of the use is equal to what it was outside of the state, I mean, that's simply not true. The test is, what are the benefits provided by the state? Not what the state might provide if Ellingson comes back, not what they may provide because then the test would just be, well, South Dakota can tax anyone in any state because we offer the same services to everyone. The test is, what services did the state provide? And as just a simple matter of arithmetic, it cannot be true that the state provided the same services to Ellingson on one day in the state as it does to someone like Gridline, which is a Mitchell drain tile company, which it uses its equipment exclusively within the state. That just can't be true. The burden of that tax proportionally falls heavier on Ellingson than it does on in-state companies. We'd ask the court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case is submitted. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.